This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 677, brought to you by Mac Weldon. For 20% off your first order, visit macweldon.com and enter promo code iFanboy at checkout. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 677. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And we are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us has the sorry task of picking their favorite book of the week. We call it the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick. We'll definitely get to some listener mail this week. It'll be fun, depending on the quality level of the books that are released.
All right, let's just get this out there. it's a 4-star week.
At best.
What I mean is, I'm going to talk about the pick of the week. We're going to like it. It's all going to be fine. But it's a 4-star book.
Let's just say, spoiler warning, review show, spoilers, caution. Josh is the pick. But before we get to that, I felt really bad for you. After I finished reading, I was like, oh, shit.
I went... Wait, is that it? Did I read everything? Like, there was definitely that.
A lot of books, and at best, the best books were 4 stars at best.
Yeah. However, there is something that I wanted to bring up. The pick of the week is Red Sonja number 3. I looked. We picked Lone Ranger 4 and 5 both mm-hmm. as picks of the week, and we had not picked Red Sonja. We've talked about it for both of the other issues.
Yep.
This is by Mark Russell from Dynamite, art by Mirko Kolak. Bob Q showing up to assist with colors.
I think Bob Q also did art.
Is that maybe it was some of it? Both the credits in this were very sparse.
There's a back page full credits.
Oh, is that it? I missed it. Anyway, Bob Q, you know, he was used to doing 2 books at a time. He was like, "What do you guys got for me? Yep. I can't do this few. I can do 2-3 books at a time. So why not?" Anyway.
I'm sorry. I'm pretty sure that Bob Q did the flashback sequences.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, well, he did.
It's a really good looking book. And yes. It literally, at one point I looked back, I was like, is Jordy Belair coloring this? And like, that's how good looking it is.
Yeah, no, it's real good. It's a really
Other
good
than that, I was thinking about why it is that we keep coming back to talk about Mark Russell's work and why it's exciting. Because the fact is, when I see that there's a book by him, I get excited. I'm like, oh, great. And it's not just that he's funny, mm-hmm. because he is, or that he's smart, but I think that he's doing mainstream comics from an approach and a position that is new to me. He's not a guy who came up in comics, so he's telling these comic stories using the same tools that everybody's just – it's just a little askew, and sort of his approach to these is a little different than everybody's, and that makes it – fresh and interesting.
It feels unlike any other book you're reading, for sure.
It does. Not radically different, like, you know, like if you read a Sam Keith book and be like, this is like nothing else. It's not in that way. It's just, it's like it's bringing a different set of influences. Like, I don't know, if you were to compare it to music, you know, like you have a rock band and then a guy comes in there who's never played blues and rock, but he sort of can fit in there and he just gives it a little bit of a different sound than anything. And I feel like Mark Russell is like that, you know. It's not inaccessible. It's just twisted just enough that it feels fresh. And in the world of comics, that's a really special thing, because so much of what is done is that, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants and building on what came before it and traditions and styles. And, you know, he's understanding that. He's doing it, but it's not quite the same. So I'm reading this Sword and Sorcery, you know, Red Sonja book, and it's entertaining. Mm-hmm. There's sort of funny bits. There's, you know, the Emperor character obviously is sort of the comic foil. But at the same time, there's all this stuff going on that, you know, is really interesting in terms of, you know, barbarian strategy and warfare and supply lines and, you know, fighting impossible odds. And it's not so far removed from the way that like a Grant Morrison would write something like this. I was like, this is very strategic. This is learned. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of deep thought happening in terms of the world. And it's also very much, I mean, it's in the same realm of Game of Thrones. So it's like, you know, dealing with mercenaries who switch sides at the drop of a hat, depending on who's paying them more, but still outsmarting them with tactics. And, you know, the warrior women who are underestimated, of course, and then, you know, are badass. So there's a lot of things going on here in a very familiar vein, but feels fresh. And the art is a big plus. Mirko Kolak is really, really good. And Deirbre Kelly is the colorist. She's really good, too. And I never thought I would be reading a Red Sonja book like this and enjoying it like this.
Yeah. And, you know, like we've talked about this, but like I've read others, you know, I've checked them out by people I like, you know, but it's kind of, you know, like, all right, let's just for example, Conan came out this week, right?
Yeah.
Conan by Jason Aaron, beautiful mm-hmm. book, really fun to read, but it's Conan. It's a really good Conan. I mean, it's like clearly Jason Aaron like has read the Robert E. Howard stuff. He's doing the stuff, you know, he's doing the voice of it. This should just sense, and that's what a lot of it is. And people do it really well or sort of blandly to whatever extent. But this is taking that and just turning it a little bit. And I know, like you said, it's like Game of Thrones, in it, but it's lighter than that.
Tonally, it's not the same. It's just in the world, it's similar tropes to that kind of thing. But I think what you're trying to say is a lot of people are making comics. They're doing their take on a thing in the past. Yes. This is my Venom story. This is my Clone Saga. Whereas this, Mark Russell doesn't do that. Even when he's working in DC, like Wonder Twins isn't familiar at all.
But even if maybe he is doing that and this is what comes out. I mean, again, like to use a music thing, you know, that's what how a lot of music gets created is like, well, I was trying to make it sound like this and mm-hmm. what it came out with was something different. You know, that's how art's supposed to work. It's just in the way that he makes these comics and writes them. It's very appealing. And I really like that. At first, I think we'd read through Prez and the Flintstones or whatever. And then he showed up a couple of DC things and I thought, oof, maybe this isn't for him. But as we move over into some of these other genres, you know, he's got something to say there too. And I really like, you know, I like getting out of it that the bit in the beginning about, you know, loyalty in war. I have this many men. Do you have this many men? You know, and then having that sort of illustrated in sort of a, you know, like a kung fu kind of lesson kind of thing.
Right.
There's just a lot going on. And that thoughtfulness, I just appreciate it so much. And then, you know, I think you make a really good point. Historically, you might have a good run on a book at Dynamite or Top Cow I don't want to denigrate, but you know, you'd always be like, yeah, it's pretty good. Doesn't look great.
Yeah.
And this is a great looking book too. By every right, like, you know, this should be like, it would let it be almost dumb and sort of exploitative. And you've got like this beautiful woman in a bikini, you know, like that could be enough for some people, you know, that thing like, well, it's got zombie gorillas in it, so I like it. He's not gonna run with that though.
Right.
So in this week of, you know, okay, books, you know, I had to really think, like, well, what did I enjoy? What do I appreciate? And what else do I have to say about Mark Russell? And that is what I came up with.
And I mean, also, he's clearly capable of doing a action sequence, a war story. I mean, it's not a Jason Aaron sword fight.
Nope.
Who's like a maestro at that kind of thing. But it's not like he can't do it. The fight scene here was fun and exciting and interesting. And it had a twist and it had strategy behind it. He's clearly capable of doing it. So he's showing us more tools in his toolkit as he takes on more books, which is nice.
It is nice. Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy this series. And again, if you told me that we'd be talking about a Red Sonja series, almost regardless of who's doing it, I wouldn't have thought that possible.
Right. Well, there you go. This is 2019 for you.
There you go.
The War of the Realms, number one. Speaking of Jason Aaron, Russell Dauterman, Matthew Wilson, Josephino, this is the, I guess, an event? Who knows anymore?
It's an event that it's being treated as if it's one.
Yeah, that's true.
It's the culmination, presumably, of sort of years of prep and planning throughout the Thor books and some other books. Certainly a little bit of the Avengers, too.
Well, he's writing Thor, obviously. He's been writing Thor for a long time. He's writing Avengers. So this is his grand Thor story bleeding into the rest of the Marvel Universe. So you've got all the characters from Thor along with all of the Avengers, plus Spider-Man and the Punisher and Daredevil and Doctor Strange, people he's written in the past. So it's sort of his two books together plus the rest of the Marvel Universe.
And you know, I don't know how much this bleeds into other issues. It didn't seem like the list was all that long, but it does in this sense make sense that the story that they've been leading up to would be a universe-wide thing because everybody else would need to be involved.
Sure.
You know, like the army, the war elf hordes show up in New York City. Yeah, I think Cap might show up.
I mean, you think so, for sure. Yep,
I mean, who knows? He might have an art showing.
So you've been reading Thor the whole time.
Yeah.
What did you think of this issue?
It felt kind of like another issue of Thor.
Mm-hmm.
With guest stars to a certain extent. But it also felt like, all right, good, let's get on with it. Because we have been building this for years now.
Right.
So sort of this war has been going on in the background, and I think it's definitely time to sort of push it out. I think the Loki in this is really good. We don't really know where he stands. He keeps trying to do good, but then he turns around and changes. Definitely drawn like Tom Hiddleston.
Yep.
I like that Thor has a strong point of view. You know, he was kind of lost for a while and trying to figure it out. And this is, you know, Thor gets his mojo back. They cured. I can't remember if it was this one or the end. Like, you've got a little clatch of the lady fighters.
Right.
And Jane Foster's basically like in remission and cured.
Right.
So, you know, she's going to be part of the war. You know, it's everybody's sort of coming together. Spider-Man mixed up with, you know, the Viking ladies and fighting all the dark elves. Like, it's fun. It didn't blow my socks off.
Yeah,
I think
that's what I'd say.
I enjoyed reading it, and I know it's like it's a really big deal for these comics, but I don't think that there was a oh my god moment. I mean, the last page reveal is basically Thor showing up swinging his hammers, right. Which is like, well, yeah, but that could have happened on the first page. But, you know, like as a part of this sort of ongoing Thor story, it's great. And I think, you know, it'll be fun. It'll be a good story. And I'm going to be glad to see like a conclusion to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think just because it's been going on for quite a while. And I want Thor to get his hammer back. And I'm hoping that this is where it happens.
I think it's got to be. I mean, they mentioned he has a piece of Mjolnir. And they haven't mentioned that in a while. So that seems to be... It's always like when you're watching a TV show and previously on, there's a character you haven't seen in forever. Like, you know, that character's going to show up. So it just seems like this is the time to if he's going to win the War of the Realms, it's going to have to be with Mjolnir, right? So
yeah. And also there's like a, I don't know. I mean, in the movies, though, he didn't have his hammer and they find, hey, you're Thunder. Oh, right. You know, and he shoots lightning at everybody and that's the thing.
Right.
Whatever. You know, but there's been a lot of seeds sown. And I am very confident that, like, we're going to get to see those come together. Like, there was a long issue of Odin, like, not being able to tell his son that he's proud of him, you know, and, like, that's going to come to fruition at some point. You know, the thing with Jane Foster, the stuff with the dog, all that stuff, you know.
Odin got stabbed through the chest, so he's clearly dead forever.
Oh, I mean, yeah, that's how comics work with gods.
And Loki gets eaten by the frost giant. He's clearly dead forever, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's never faked his death before. I was... Hit and miss on the Dowderman art.
It was a little...
There was some really terrific panels and sequences and pages, but there was somewhere I was just like, not what you expect from Dowderman, but overall it looked good.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying. I can see that.
I mean, he's dealing with a lot of characters, so I guess
he is. Who he's probably not drawn a ton. Like, all the Asgardians look great, except Lady Freya's hair is way too big and it bothers me.
It's like a 60s beehive.
I like how She-Hulk just keeps getting bigger and stronger and weirder. I'm totally fine with that, by the way. That's not like, I love this. I really do like it. That's just getting out of control.
I'm looking forward to this. I know it doesn't sound like maybe we are, but it was fun. It's going to be in Avengers. It's going to be in Thor. It's Guardians of the Galaxy, Venom, Squirrel Girl. And then there's going to be a bunch of... specials. This is just act one, so I don't know, you know how long.
And also, I mean, to be fair, not much really happened in this.
Yeah.
Like, Malekith came through the gate, a bunch of people got around it, shit starts to go down, but nothing really happened.
Right.
Which is fine. I'm looking forward to the whole thing. But, you know, it's some first issues try to do too much and some try to take it easy. You know, this is more of a slow roll for me, so it's fine.
Right. So like I read the first issue, I was like, damn, where's issue two? It's like, that was good. When issue two comes out, I will be looking forward to it.
Yeah, that would have been nicer, though.
I'm curious because I think you and I are both a little on the Immortal Hulk fence.
Well, I was going to ask if you had dropped off Immortal Hulk as we get to the 16th issue here.
I feel like we're playing a game of chicken to see who drops off first.
I liked this issue. I think after whatever the last dream sequence-y other world thing going on happened.
Hell?
Yeah, that's what it was. See, I've already started to block it out. And then whatever's... And then this dovetails also with sort of the Hulk that we are seeing in Avengers No Road Home.
Sure. Al Ewing's doing
because Al Ewing is writing part of that. And so the Hulk is consistent between those two books. I feel like this is a little more, okay, we're back in the world. We're dealing with the Hulk family. We're sort of dealing with what the nature of Hulk and Banner is now, which is kind of interesting. It seems consistent with the things I liked about the first couple issues. I don't know. I feel like we're back on track a little bit.
Things I liked.
Okay.
Classic Doc Samson costume. They are not, as of yet, fucked with that. It's ridiculous. He looks like a wrestler in the 80s. It's great. Things I don't like. This is a trend beyond this book. It's not the fault of the book. The idea of making everyone supporting cast part of the superhero team. So here, Betty's already got Hulk powers, and clearly they have dug up Rick Jones' body, and they have immersed him in liquid gamma radiation, so clearly he's going to wake up with Hulk powers.
Well, he already was Ambush? Is that what it was called?
I don't remember, but the point is, it's just
Blue-ish.
It's like, you know, let some people just be people, and they'll give them all powers.
But this has been going on for decades now.
I don't know about
that. It used to happen a long time ago, but it would just be temporary.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Everybody has become superpowered in a given family. And you're right. That's across everything.
I like bits of it. I like the... I actually really like the reporter sequence with her editor.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. I actually really liked the device of using Rick Jones's autobiography as the captions.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting writing
mm-hmm.
in terms of his psyche and what he thinks about the Hulk. I like the issue. It was one of my, the better ones recently, but I'm still like, I'm not sold on all the Hulk stuff like you are, and I just hate the way he transforms now. And
it's just
I get it's a horror book now. I get it.
Yeah, I also liked, I really like the fact that Doc Samson is trying to therapize Hulk.
Sure.
As they walk around, and like, Hulk's smarter than he is now.
Right.
So like his power isn't just raw brute force. It's sort of a different thing, and he, you know, I don't know, maybe he's supposed to be the world ender or something like that, but I just like that he's playing along. I like that mind game kind of stuff that's happening. And, you know, Doc Samson's trying to help. God, you're just right. Doc Samson might be Marvel Universe's Adam Strange. Like, just let it be whatever this is.
Right. And I get that this is for the story, but the idea that he only turns into Hulk in the nighttime and turns back into Banner when there's sun is kind of dumb. Especially since I think he's probably in the sunlight in the other Avengers book.
Mm-hmm. But again, it's long established that there's lots of different kind of Hulks.
I get it.
It's not new. And then Joe Fixit, I guess, is going to show up. And that doesn't mean a lot to me other than one of my first comics was the Claremont Buscema Wolverine series in the late 80s.
Yeah.
And Joe Fixit showed up in that. And I will never forget that image or the way that Buscema drew him.
Buscema did the best Hulk ever. All the Buscemas.
No, but like that, I hadn't read Hulk in a while, and I know what you're talking about because I had How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way, but he was in like a gangster suit.
Yeah.
And he was gray, and his proportions were just awesome next to Logan.
Well, that's classic Peter David run that was definitely before your return, and I only read part of. That's one run I want to go back and read. Like if I ever had time in my life, I would love to read the Peter David Hulk run.
Yeah, oh yeah, I think that'd be fun.
The Green Lantern number 6, Grant Morrison, Liam Sharp still on this. Speaking of Adam Strange, I love the Silver Age-iness of the cover.
Yeah.
I love captions. I love dialogue covers. I love everything about these kind of covers. This issue was a little wonky, but I liked Hal Jordan and Adam Strange having to do a duel.
Uh-huh.
It was interesting. I just love Adam Strange. He's in this a lot.
And that we're on Ran here, right?
Yes.
So the way that Ran is drawn with this sort of, neo-futurist, retro-modern kind of space vibe,
mm-hmm.
like the Fantastikar or whatever that is that they're in at the beginning.
Right.
It's just beautiful. Like, Liam Sharp is in his world right now.
I'm really impressed by Liam Sharp in this book. More and more. Yeah. There's a really great page where it's like half of Hal's face in close-up and the rest of the panel's all black, and I really like that that panel a lot.
Yeah.
So in this issue, I guess the Dark Stars figure out that Hal's been undercover with them, and then they fuck him up, and Adam Strange gets zapped back to Earth because the Zeta Beam wears off, and that's always fun.
Well, you had highlighted that panel, which was also one that I had noted, Stay Away From My Daughter, Space Bastard. Where he's flying and his shirt's torn and I was just like, yes, that's the stuff.
It's good.
It's real good. That's a like, I could, if I really couldn't find a pick of the week, I could have been like, yeah, but that panel. So this book gets it.
This wonderful texture to Liam Sharp's work with the cross hatching on the alien heads. It has a different feeling than other comics.
It feels like old timey art. I don't know if he works digitally or not, but it doesn't look like it.
Yeah, it yes. It just doesn't, there's no other book that looks like this. It didn't work for other characters. It works for Green Lantern. It didn't work for Batman and Wonder Woman, but it really does work for this mm-hmm. book. This book was weird and sometimes hard to follow, this particular issue.
Yes.
But Let It Be with Green Lantern.
Yeah. Who's the dude at the end?
That I wasn't quite sure of.
Okay.
He is somebody, I think, but I don't know.
It's like ugly Mitch's Pitlick.
That's what I thought. I think it's someone people know, but I'm sure it'll be explained next issue.
Yeah, no.
It might even be somebody I know. I just don't know particularly. He has really bitchin' sideburns, though.
I've never seen a character that looked like that. Actually, kind of looks like there's a little...
looks like Oberon.
Also Oberon. Little Banshee.
Yeah.
Like after things didn't go well.
It's a weird book, which is the best compliment I can give to it.
I know it was a little hard to follow, but I was kind of just enjoying it on a pulp level.
Yeah.
I was just like, look at that. Oh, that's cool. Look at that. You know, it's a little Wally Wood in there. Good stuff. It's so good, it doesn't even matter if it's bad.
I don't think it's bad at all. I just think this issue was hard to follow. Let's take a quick break to talk about Mack Weldon, and they have a simple mission to make all your basics and beyond as smartly designed and easily shopped as possible. Mack Weldon makes my life easy. I go to the website, I find what I need, I get it real quick. So they started from scratch. They engineered their own fabric. It's deliciously comfortable, as I like to say. They made sure the design process was meticulous. You can count on the fit being the same each time. They built a world-class customer experience and the differences in the details. So they obsess over every stitch and seam until they reach their definition of perfect. And Josh and I have been talking for at least a year about our underwear.
More.
People have learned more about our underwear preferences than I think they ever would have imagined in their entire lives. I learned more about your underwear preferences than I ever would have imagined in my entire life. And I've known you since we were teenagers. So.
And we're not teenagers.
Let's not talk about underwear for the time being. Let's talk about the pants. Okay. The pants are terrific. There's two kinds of pants they just added to the store that Josh and I have been enjoying lately. There is the Ace sweat pant and the Radius pant, which is they suggest is for outdoor or travel. Now, Josh spends a lot more time in the outdoors than I do, and that's where he wears his Radius pant.
I did. I took a hike. I took a hike with the kids in my Radius pant, and it was one of those days where it was like 50, kind of cold, kind of warm, depending on where you're standing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a pair of similar pants from a reputed outdoor firm.
I thought you were going to say a reputed mobster. I was like,
no,
wow.
No. Just a, you know, like a high-end outdoor clothing brand that you mm-hmm. would know. But sure. I'm not going to tell you what that is. And I didn't wear those this time. I wore the Radius pant this time. It's a little slimmer.
Mm-hmm. A little tapered in the leg. A little tapered. A little structured.
A little modern, if yeah. we're going to be honest about it. And also, just to know, real easy to go too far with that and make it wrong.
Sure.
A lot of the pants out there, they get, I think they're called joggers, I think is what the kids call them now. those can go too far in that direction, I think.
Yes, for sure.
But these were really good for that. The zippered pockets are a big thing, belt loops, so I can sort of, you know, tighten it up. But they were really, I was perfectly temperature regulated the whole time. They're a little water resistant, so I wasn't getting wet. The wind wasn't going through them. Which has been really good because it's been kind of cold and windy and wet around here lately, but I've been still trying to get outside.
I avoid and shun the outdoors, but
sure.
I have a big plane trip coming up, one of those trips where you're on a plane longer than any human being should be on a plane, and I plan on wearing my Radius pant coupled with my Mack Weldon anti-rolling microfiber underwear.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm going to get the full Mack Weldon experience when I travel luxuriously in those pants. The travel pants are great because, as we talked about before, and as Josh said, it looks like a modern, nice pant, but it's also very comfortable and there's give and there's elastic in the waistband and it's nice. So when you're sitting on a plane for a long time, you don't feel
the little elastic on the back of the ankle is nice.
It's nice. And the Ace sweat pant, I spend way more time in at home than
yes
an adult should.
I've left the house in them, and if you know me, that's fairly significant. I work from home. And every morning I get up and I put pants on, which is the joke about working from home. But there have been days where I, for the first time in a very long time, I was like, I'm wearing these Ace sweatpants at home.
Well, they're soft French terry cloth. So what do you want? Luxury for your body is what you want. And that's what you get with those pants. Mack Weldon believes in smart design, premium fabric, simple shopping. They'll be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and more you'll ever wear. And the line of silver underwear and shirts are naturally antimicrobial, which means eliminate odor, and that's what I'll be wearing on my flight. They want you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it. And they'll still refund you your cost, no questions asked. Not only does Mack Weldon's underwear, socks, and shirts look good, they perform well too. Great for working out, going to work, going out on dates, everyday life, as Josh said, hiking, going outside into the world, maybe buying a donut. I'm trying to figure
yard
out
work.
What you were doing out there.
I'm sure I have.
So, how do you get into this? How do you get some Mack Weldon in your life? Go to MackWeldon.com, enter promo code iFanboy checkout. You get 20% off your first order. You're people of leisure. You're
a good deal.
You're people of means and leisure and high quality taste. You're listening to the show, for God's sakes. So, so check out, get a pair of nice sweatpants. They're nice. They're comfortable. You will not regret it for 1 second. Trust me.
No. No one has ever regretted premium clothing.
MackWeldon.com, promo code iFanboy checkout. Thank you very much.
I don't understand the Spider-Man numbering. It's bothering me.
Spider-Man numbering is a big fuck you. That's what it is.
I'm not going to hold that against the text.
No. I'm just saying the numbering. And we've seen this dumbass dot letter numbering in the past with one of those events. It's just stupid.
Well, it just makes me wonder, like, wait, am I supposed to read this? And I was like, all right, it's Nick Spencer. It's his story. It's just the next issue, though.
It's just dumb because these books are practically weekly anyway. Mm-hmm. And we know you're all sprinting to the 1,000 number, so might as well just do it. Hell, you're counting Avengers No Road Home as an Avengers book, the legacy numbering, so we might as well just give this the next number, but whatever. I'm not in charge. Anyway, you're right. This was Nick Spencer, Ken Lashley, and art. And I actually really like this. This is one of the better comics I read this week.
Yeah, it was definitely like an off the beaten path of this Spider-Man Kraven story that's been going on, but I thought it was nice. And it was basically it's the story of the Gibbon.
The Gibbon.
The Gibbon, who's a low-grade animal. I guess, was he really a villain? Like, he kind of didn't want to be.
No, it seemed like from the story. And I definitely think we've seen him before.
I don't remember him.
He wasn't in, like, Superior Foes of Spider-Man. It feels like that's where he would have been.
No, but, like, also it wasn't played as a joke in this at all, really.
No, that's because it fucking gets fucked up.
Yeah, but it wasn't, like, even, like, it would have been really easy to play it as a joke. But the whole thing is that, like, you know, it's this guy who is kind of like a monkey. And so that made his whole life really hard. And then he found out he had some abilities that came from it. And he tried to be, you know, he tried to partner with Spider-Man. Spider-Man laughed at him. But also there's an element of that being, you know, like, was that just his point of view of that?
Right.
The way that it was drawn, you know, Spider-Man threw his head back. There's tons of laughing. You know, he overreacts. He pushes Spider-Man. You know, and then because of that, he finds himself in this situation where he's being hunted by these horrible people who are worse than the villains that they're hunting. Just sad.
Yeah, it was a really sad issue, which was good.
Yeah.
A little focus in the midst of this melee in Central Park. We focus on this one character who does not make it out of the park.
Yeah.
It was good.
And it's a lot of time to spend with that, too. So yeah. I guess if you got to put a .hu on the number in order to do that, I'm fine.
It just seems weird.
Yep, it does.
It makes sense in a time when books are nominally monthly. But if you're at this point releasing them whenever you goddamn well please, you might as well just give it the next number.
It's a lot. What's this next?
You Did Not Fall, Hit Your Head, and Wake Up in 1993. This book was written by Carl Kessel and drawn by Tom Grummett, who were mainstays of the early 90s. Tom Grummett, one of my favorite artists as a kid, drew everything. Section Zero, latest book from Image Comics' Shadow Line group. You know, it was all right. It's a bunch of people who are a clandestine group for the UN who investigate like monsters and... You know, the guy has hair on his chin, but that's the only place he's got hair on his face. And the girl doesn't wear pants. And there's an alien.
I feel like I've read this.
This book, yeah. First of all, it felt very much like they've done this version of this many times. But also, it just felt like this book was done 25 years ago. And sometimes that really works. But other times, you're just like, did someone let Tom Grummett know no one wears a hair like this anymore? He's the badass with the sunglasses and the chin hair. And
well, it brings up a sort of interesting question in terms of like there's guys who weren't that old when they sort of came into being, you know, like when they made it in comics, you know, say that a guy comes up in the 90s and he's in his 20s then, you know, he could theoretically still be working up to this point. Mm-hmm. But sometimes those folks fail to update their styles for the world we now live in, and it's very apparent.
We often joke about Alan Davis's characters right. look like they're wearing clothes from the 70s, and which is fine. Sometimes that's charming. But
and some people are so good or so beloved that they get away with it. Alan Davis is a good example of that. I think Mark Bagley suffers from this a little bit. I think he not as much.
Modern artists are much better at drawing people who look like real people in the real time than they were even 10 years ago. We used to joke about that all the time on the show.
Just making things look contemporary.
Yeah. I mean, that's why McKelvey stood out so much when he first came on the scene. It's because his characters actually looked like they were in the present day as opposed to 20 years earlier. And listen, this book was drawn great, and Grummet, assuming he didn't draw this 25 years ago, he still got it.
Right.
It's just that the feeling of it was not retro and throwback, more like old. And there's a fine line between the two.
Well, and I mean, I guess that's kind of what I'm getting at is that, like, it feels like that should be part of your artist toolkit. Like, you've learned your anatomy, you've learned your storytelling, but then the other little part of that to keep yourself relevant is a word I'm not super happy about is, like, think, like, if McKelvey were to draw a comic book right now, which he is, he wouldn't necessarily be drawing it. They wouldn't look like people did 15 years ago. They look like they would now, and you have to know that.
Right.
I think. And it isn't to say you change your style. You know, Tom Grummet, you draw like Tom Grummet. Jerry Ordway, you draw like Jerry Ordway. But, you know, let us know that you're living in the world now.
Well, Jerry Ordway always drew people like they were in the 50s anyway, which is fine.
Yeah, that's...
It was solid. Kessel wrote basically every major character you could write in the 90s. You know, he did run Superman and Daredevil and, you know, all kinds of people. And Grummet drew every major book. You know, these are big-time names in 1992.
Sure.
It's good to see them still... They still got it. It was not a bad comic. I don't want to say it was bad. It just felt very old.
I'm making conversation out of a book I did not.
It just felt very old.
Yeah.
It's crazy. They're getting variant covers from everyone. George Perez and somehow Mike Wieringo. They must be using an old piece of art that somehow they're using for the book.
Wow.
There's a Walter Simonson cover and a Jerry Ordway cover, as you said. So they're getting all their old buddies. And good for them. You know? We talk sometimes about old creators who we used to know and wondering what they were doing. But... Here they are, still working, which is good. You are not reading Cosmic Ghost Rider Destroys Marvel History.
No, you didn't really sell me on it last time, and then it showed up again, and I thought, that's weird.
It's dumb, but it's one of those books that Marvel does. It's a humor book that plays with their history. You don't need to worry about continuity or anything. It's dumb in an entertaining way. It's Cowboy Frank Castle goes back in time, and this issue is all about Spider-Man now. The framing device is Frank's hanging out with his wife and kid like the day before they get killed and pretending to be his old Uncle Fredo, telling them stories about when he's hung out with superheroes. And so here he's telling them all about Spider-Man adventures. And, you know, it's through a comedic lens. Paul Scheer, the comedian, is one of the writers, so it's funny. And they have a good run at the Clone Saga and the black Spider-Man suit and Venom and, you know, goofiness and original Nick Fury. Who's in this? You know, it's silly in those old Marvel ways where they used to attack the Marvel offices or whatever, or the Forbush Man, or, you know, those kind of things. It's mm-hmm. a grand Marvel tradition to tell these kind of books. And Todd Nowak did the art in this issue. He's drew Young Justice back in the really old days, and he's really good still, too. Another guy who I haven't probably seen work from in a long time and still got it for sure.
Yeah.
It was fun. It's a silly book, and in a week... Well, there wasn't a lot to read. I wasn't sure if I was going to read number two. So I'll give it a shot again, and I enjoyed it.
Good.
So it gets a third issue from Atomy.
There you go. Nice work.
And those are the books we want to talk about. There weren't a whole lot of them, and I honestly, just to give you a little peek behind the curtain, it was hard to come up with a list of books to talk about this week.
It definitely was. Get ready for some email.
Sometimes there's a lot of books, and we can't narrow it down to 10, and sometimes we don't even make it to 10. So let's do the patron pick. That's where the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy can vote to add a book to the rundown. Any patron can vote. And this week, the clear winner by...
I've never seen a blowout like that.
Was Major X, number one, from Marvel Comics, story and art by Rob Liefeld. And that's all you need to know is why I got the votes. So I think people are expecting us to gleefully shred the book. And that's not an interesting conversation for me right now.
Okay, so how would you like? I know what you're saying. Like, I don't really feel like doing that either. And however, as I was reading this book, I thought, this is bad.
Well, yeah, it's not good.
Well, like and I want to, like, okay, a long time ago, I decided it's lame, it's cheap, and it's uninteresting to take shots at Rob Liefeld.
Right.
Who is not an artist I like, which is the subjective, and being pretty good at reviewing, criticizing, understanding, knowing comics does not seem objectively that good either. But there is something about him, some combination of personality and legacy and, you know, timing, I guess, that, you know, have given him a lasting fan base. He is undoubtedly enthusiastic, and I think that speaks to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. He loves comics. He loves making them.
He does. He loves comics. But at the same time, you know, page two of this book is this major X character whose foot is on Cable, and I was like, that foot's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
There's notable examples in this of clearly bad anatomy.
Sure.
And it bothers me.
It's a 30-year-old conversation at this point.
I know it's not interesting. But the fact is, like, when I had talked about that before, I'm not saying I was not all that informed on it. Mm-hmm. I didn't read a lot of Rob Liefeld. I just know what people said. And I'd seen it here and there. I'm like, whatever, it's not mine. This time I had to sit down and read the whole book. And I didn't get anything out of it. And I
I mean, this is not a book. I don't know who this is for. I don't know what's going on. I don't know who it's for. I assume it's for hardcore X-Force fans. Because, you know, it's basically this major X character shows up and fights with the old X-Force team and Cable and Domino and Shatterstar. And then Deadpool shows up because I think Rob Liefeld wants to remind everybody he created Deadpool. And
that's definitely why he showed up.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. The Wolverine's there, and it's for a very, very small but passionate subsection of X-Men fans, comic fans, X-Men fans. You know, you're going very granular for who this book is for. And we're not in that particular grain. Yeah, like, I didn't like it. I felt in a slog. Every once in a while, there was something in the art I kind of liked. But, you know, it is what it is. He's not good with anatomy. He hasn't really changed his style over the years.
Yeah, I mean, there would be something to be said about that. Like, well, and maybe he hasn't had a reason to.
No reason to if he's, you know, got his fan base.
But, you know, I know a lot of comic book artists, and they want to do better. You know, and Rob Liefeld's been lucky in that he's never really had to do that. He didn't, you know, he made a shit ton of money right from the beginning. He's carried along sort of a lasting fan base enough to let him keep going and do what he wants and be in control of, you know, his career, which is what any artist wants, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
He's got it. Now, whether I like the work or not, that's irrelevant,
right.
I guess. But it was really, you know, it was really hard for me. I really tried to find something I like about this. There were several instances, though, where I just went, this? Which, you know, backs up what people say, but I still think it's a cheap and uninteresting conversation.
It's just been the same one for 30 years. You know, you either like him or you don't, which is fine. I mean, I liked him when I was 13 or whatever, whenever Youngblood mm-hmm. came out. And when I wasn't reading X-Force at the time, but when Image launched and he did Youngblood, I liked it. I liked all of the books.
It helps that he has nice colorist.
Yeah, times change and tastes change. It is what it is.
If you look at page 28, the right side is just the sort of full body shot of Major X.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you go two pages over to the end, he bulked up a lot in those two pages.
Yeah.
He got much larger. Arms are still short. It's really hard not to do that, what I just did. I'm trying not to, but there was a lot. Like, I don't even know what this was or who anybody was. And it's actually the writing and storytelling wasn't all that confusing, but the sort of style of it was very much of a time.
This is not even close to being for you. It's not even the same galaxy.
No. I am genuinely curious what people who like this would get out of it, but I'm assuming that we would have very little in common in our taste, so it wouldn't even matter anyway.
Major X, number one, the ratings out of 5.
Mm-hmm. What did we say here? Am I nice? And nice is a 2, by the way.
Yeah, that's what I thought when I was reading it.
Fine.
I'm going to go 1.5.
Yeah, that makes more sense. 1.5.
Sticking with it.
Oh, yeah. I'm totally going to read it.
Nope. All right.
All right. You asked for it. You got it.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. You want to add a book to the rundown?
Yeah. If you want to take part in this or be a bulwark against this kind of thing happening again, you know, it works either way, get over to patreon.com/iFanboy. If you do that, then at a high enough level, you will, of course, be able to get the patron powers, which you're coming up to. But you get a chance to vote every week on the book that you would like us to cover. And we have to. We have to. We have to read it and we have to talk about it. And we will try to do so with as much respect as possible. Because we're professionals. But we have other goals we have on there. We've reached goals before, obviously, with our Booksplodes and Talksplodes. The next stretch goal is a monthly non-comics media podcast that will be uploaded. And then we will also upload all of the remaining video shows and minis to our YouTube channel and do that. Also, there's the Patreon Hangout. There's all sorts of reasons to do that. The most important reason really is that, like, I like the show and I want to support it and everything else is golden. But, you know, it really helps us keep things going. This takes up a lot of time and a lot of effort, and we kind of have to justify that in our lives a little bit. And so that's what this is for. And man, do we appreciate the people who have done that. Really, you make a big difference to us, and it makes us, you know, that much more excited to go do this show all the time. So thanks for that. Also, if you just want some, you want some swag, you want some merch, you want some stuff, get over to ifanboy.threadless.com. There are 7 designs over there, some classics, iFanboy, Herm, things like that. Rating shirt, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters. All good. That rating shirt is great. I hadn't thought about that in a little bit. So stupid.
I love it. I have 2.
Earlier, you talked about the dumb comic, and that's a dumb shirt or whatever it is, phone case, whatever it is you're going to put it on. Ratings. Get over there. If you just want to send some a little gift, a little contribution via PayPal, you can do that at ifanboy.com/support. And finally, at ifanboy.com/Amazon, you can find a link to buy all the books that we talk about on Booksplode. There's links in our pick of the weeks to the pick book itself. And also there's just a general link over to Amazon. So if you have to pick yourself up some sundries, I'm not sure what sundries are. It's like flour and soap.
Yeah. Kind of thing. Some gingham.
Dry goods. Yeah. Some gingham. Wagon repair tools. Yeah. These kinds of things. You can find
Amazon
there to do that. Yeah.
A pan.
Wait a minute. Are we heading to Deadwood?
Yeah, I am.
We're heading into the territories.
Let me say one more thing about Major X before we move on. I knew what to expect going into Major X. I wasn't like disappointed or shocked by it. Whereas there was another book from the Big Two this week that I thought had really horrendous art. It was a fairly high profile book. And so I know what I'm getting from Rob Liefeld. I'm not surprised by it or upset about it. This other book I was interested in reading and I read it and I could not believe that that was the art of the book. So, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world.
I did know what to expect, but I did think to myself, I'm going to give them a chance to impress me, which wouldn't have been a very high bar.
I don't even need to be impressed. I just know what's going to happen because it hasn't changed in 30 years.
Yeah.
And at least it's somewhat interesting to look at because you're like, huh. Whereas
that's a very optimistic,
boring and uninteresting art shouldn't happen in the Big Two. It should at least be interesting and dynamic. But anyway, let's talk about patron powers. Patreon.com/iFanboy. In addition to voting for the book, you can get your own superpower on the show live if you give it the $5 or higher level over at Patreon. Patrick Kunkel's our first patron. We may have given this power before. If so, you guys can team up. Patrick can box up anything.
I had a shipping power that was similar to that.
Well, they can all team up and maybe have a shipping store. But he,
yeah.
No matter how cumbersome your item or fragile, he can box it up. He's got a box for it. He's got shipping materials. Got the box. And the box just appears. He's like, all right, here's your box.
I had to email. I had to ship a guitar to Ohio. And it was terrifying. But it got there okay. But
should have called Patrick. He would have had the perfect box for you.
Yep.
He'd been like, this is the box I need. Thank you, Patrick.
Joel Everett Wheeler always makes sure to do his business in person, never over the phone or email, because he can smell lies.
He can smell lies.
Yeah, if somebody's lying, he's, you're not telling me the truth.
Lie sniffer.
He's a lie sniffer. True.
Does it get more intense if the lie is worse? If it's like a white lie, is it like a less strong odor, or is it always the same odor?
Yeah, it's like farts. like, oh man, what did you eat? And I think something's definitely fishy right now. There's, yeah, I would say that there's a
intensity spectrum. Difference.
Sure. And because, you know, he's the only guy who can do this, he's pretty on top of it.
Jason Smith never needs to back up his hard drive, but he also will never lose his data.
So his
data is always protective. Yes.
Wow.
It will never fail. So he just doesn't worry about it. It's automatically backed up always.
All right.
And he also has all of it for his whole life. You know what I mean?
So does he run out of storage? He still has to.
No, he has a magic hard drive.
Is it unlimited?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he has all the data from the time before they were, you know, backup systems.
Does the hard drive have upgradable connections? Like to start with USB 1, then he got to USB 3.
Yeah, because it's magic. It's FireWire. always updating and always like, there's always enough room.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, no matter what the device is.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Have you lost some data lately?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I opened a drawer over by my wife's desk, and I found my wife is a professional photographer for a good amount of time, and I found just a graveyard of old hard drives. And I was like, oh God. Just had to close the drawer. It was too difficult.
I haven't lost anything, but I am haunted still by the two hard drive failures I've had. I had
a couple.
To this day.
I had we have a friend of the show. I don't know if he listens anymore, but he worked for a hard drive company.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent us some product.
Yep.
At certain parts, and one of them I had had very nice unit that I had had as a time machine on my iMac, and it died recently.
Mm.
But you know, like it went years.
Yeah, I remember those. Yeah.
It was a good hard drive, and I was like, oh no, do I have to go buy a new hard drive now? I just repurposed.
Well, Jason never worries about this.
I know. It's nice. It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad at all. Stanley Martin,
mm-hmm.
He can make any food healthy. Eat what you want.
Oh, wow.
He's going to remove all of the bad fat, all the cholesterol, all the overage of salt. You're not going to notice the difference in the food's taste or texture. It's going to be just as good.
Does he remove it after you've tasted it, or just it still tastes like the same, but it just doesn't have anything bad in it?
Yeah. He doesn't remove it after you've tasted it. It's when he makes the food and serves it to you.
So it's only with the food he cooks. It's not like you can order a pizza and he could turn a pizza healthy.
No, he could, I mean, if he could, you can be at the restaurant with him and in his presence, we'll say there's a little, you know, 6-foot bubble.
Well, Stanley, let's be best friends.
Right? Can you just imagine? Will you have the cake? I will have the cake.
Where's Stanley? Bring him back.
Yeah, no one. He doesn't want to go to dinner with anybody anymore.
No one.
It's like that Seinfeld with the lip reader.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can get your superpower. Let's do some listener questions as we have time for that now. Adam writes in, says, just sorting through some old comics and found Grant Morrison's Batman and Robin and Scott Snyder's Black Mirror. It made me really nostalgic for that era. Is that an era we're now nostalgic for? Jesus.
I mean, it's possible.
Thinking about it, I also prefer Kamala Khan to Carol Danvers as Ms. Marvel and Wally West as The Flash. I miss that Batman era, but at the same time, I'd be going crazy if he was still the superior Spider-Man instead of Peter Parker. So I guess there's no real one-size-fits-all answer. I probably need to ask a question. Do you have a legacy character you prefer to the original? Been thinking about this question as I write the email.
Some of those, I don't feel like Kamala Khan and Carol Danvers are occupying the same space.
No, they're not. They have the same name.
Name and colors, but
they're not the same hero. It's not like Wally West is the Flash.
Right. I think he's got a point about Dick Grayson as Batman. And I don't mean that I want Bruce Wayne to be replaced, but I really those are my favorite Batman stories that Scott Snyder wrote. Not just because of the jock art, which is very nice, but I feel like that didn't get it got cut short. And I really liked it, and I found it really interesting. And I totally think it should have sort of gone back the way it was, but I don't think that story was finished, and I think they could have gone further with it.
Yeah.
I liked that. I liked Renee Montoya as the Question.
Mm-hmm.
Not in Gotham Central, but outside of Gotham Central. I enjoyed – it went on, I think, this much too long, but I enjoyed Bucky as Captain America for a while.
I think that was probably the right amount of time.
Yeah.
The thing is, generally speaking, people tend to like the version of the character that they first started reading.
Yes.
So, like, most people of a certain age who started reading at a certain time prefer Wally to Barry as Flash, mm-hmm. or Kyle Rayner as Green Lantern to Hal.
I was going to say, I really like Kyle Rayner as Green Lantern. I know right. you don't, but...
Right, and that's because I started reading Silver and Bronze Age comics, and so I was a Hal, Barry, Ollie guy, and people who started reading... You know, later in the 90s are Kyle, Wally, and Connor Hawkeyes. That's just because you tend to gravitate to the person who you met at the dance, if I can mm-hmm. really mangle that analogy. But, I mean, but Hal and Barry are legacy characters because they came after Alan Scott and Jay Garrick. So, in a sense, if I prefer Hal, then he's a legacy character of Alan Scott. So Hal is a legacy character I prefer.
Yeah.
Barry is a legacy character I prefer over Jay Garrick. I love Jay Garrick and Alan Scott, but you know, if you're talking one Flash to read, I'd read Barry Allen. Just depends on who you, generally speaking, who you start reading first, I think, is what happens. But then there are other things like Dick Grayson or Bucky or, you know, one-off stories that people really find refreshing, so they want more of that. But eventually that will get stale too, and you need to go back.
Yeah. I mean, Blue Superman, you know, it's like that was fun for a little bit. Okay. It's slightly different, but it's the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
I was trying to, are there any of those that you can remember that you really liked, though?
What do you mean?
I don't know. We're basically like they replace, I mean, like Jean-Paul Valley as Batman, probably not one of them.
No. But that's just the story. That was the same as
right.
Superior Spider-Man. The story was about the change and how it was going to go back. That was the story being told.
Yeah. And Superior Spider-Man was actually much more fun than I had any right to be.
Yeah.
I think.
You also really liked Doom as Iron Man.
I did like that. That's a really good point. And again, I felt like that was cut a little short because they were doing something there.
But you also wouldn't want 10 years of that.
No. No, you're right.
Because it's just a story being told and it's interesting while they're telling that story.
And yeah, they all.
And then the story is over and you want to go back.
Yeah.
I liked... The Dick Grayson as Batman story for the second time, because it happened in the 90s the first time, was mm-hmm. fun as an examination of what that's like. But then I wanted to go back to Bruce Wayne. I'm always going to want that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like Miles Morales, but I prefer Peter Parker.
Miles Morales is actually a really good one. I think that was a good and lasting sort of character.
He's kind of like Kamala Khan in that even though he's called Spider-Man, he doesn't feel that same...
Yeah.
They're not telling the same kind of stories. Whereas Wally is basically just, they were telling the same kind of stories with Barry, just in a different age. Whereas they're different stories.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm a Silver Age character guy. So I you know, those are all legacy characters over the Golden Age characters. But everyone's characters they like the best.
Want to do another one?
Yeah.
Let's do another one. I don't know this answer, but Ken from the Great White North said, do I spend my money on the first collection of Terry and the Pirates or the Spirit, or is there a third option from that time period that I should buy?
I would say the Spirit.
I would also say the Spirit, but part of that is about I've heard of Terry and the Pirates, and I know that it's remarkably influential over a period of people. And also this time period we're talking about, 30s, 40s.
Because of Eisner, you'd go for the Spirit.
Yes. He's the guy the award's named after.
Right. I mean, Terry and the Pirates, I have only seen a little bit of, so I can't, you know, recommend it like as much as I can.
Stan Lee loved it. Like, it was a really big influence on Stan Lee. I know that much.
But, you know, Eisner basically created the industry. So, you know, it's like saying, you know, should I watch the original Twilight Zone? You know, it's like, yes. Because that was one of the things that helped create television. So if you love the medium and you want to find out and see the roots of it, and I would say get the Spirit.
You should also watch Playhouse 90.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I'm guessing that Terry and the Pirates is a very good thing to read. I don't know how well it translates, but I know that it's remarkably, you know, that Buck Rogers or Karl Barks' The Duck Stories, things like that. Like, read all that stuff. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Let's do one more. Mark says, I've been thinking about this question since 2008, since Iron Man was released. Let's put an end to the debate. Graphic novels versus trade paperbacks. What's what and what's the difference?
They're just words. It's all comics. That's not true, exactly. I don't think graphic novel. Why don't you talk? You talk.
Well, I mean, I think there's two ways to look at it. One, ultimately, I think ultimately there is no difference, and they're interchangeable. Mm-hmm. But I know that my sort of loose definition, and I don't say the loose because I use them interchangeably, is that I think of trade paperbacks as collections of stories that came out in single issue form, whereas graphic novels I think of as works that were created specifically for the graphic novel format in terms of an original graphic novel, a 120-page story, as opposed to a collection of 20-page stories. That's what I think. That's how I tend to use it in my head. But again, I just use them interchangeably anyway.
I feel like trade paperback is actually like just a product term. It's like a paperback that you'd release of a book. It's just that we started using this term trades as sort of a catch-all.
Right.
I do tend to think of it as a – I mean, originally this was a collection of issues put together in a paperback that you could then sell in different outlets and stores and in different form. Graphic novels a little more – like trade paperback is a term that came to mean more than it is. Like we'd say wait for the trade. Now that might be a hardcover when it comes out.
Right.
You know, but that's kind of like it turned it – you know, it's turned really, more than it was.
We should be saying collection. Wait for the collection, which is what –
yes. Graphic novel, on the other hand, is a marketing term, basically, to make adults feel okay about reading comic books.
And yes, but I tend to think of, like, I wouldn't call, like, an OG, I wouldn't call a Asterius Polyp a comic book.
Oh, I think it's comics.
It's comics, but I wouldn't call it a comic book.
Because of the format, you mean?
Because of the format. Comics is the medium, and a comic book is a 20-page form, whereas a graphic novel, to me, like I said, this is my personal thing, is a 100-page original work.
Well, what about Detective Comics 1000?
It's a comic book.
Well, I know, but it was 100 pages. Yeah. By the way, I saw the physical Detective Comics 1000 in the store the other day, and the paper was garbage. I was like, what's this crap?
Jeez. That's why it's all loose and loosey-goosey, and it's all...
Yeah, but I do think that one thing that is morphed is that graphic novel gets used as a term. So when they talk about a comic on NPR, they can say this is a graphic novel or so-and-so is a graphic novelist. And that makes some people look up and pay more attention if they said it was a comic book. That's why it was originally used, and it still gets used this way. Was it Tom King tweeted about something recently where someone's like, well, we'd have you on if you had done more graphic novels and not comics or something like that. Somebody, some pro, like they had that conversation with a media outlet. So it still like exists. And to me, like, if I knew of a cartoonist, you know, like, or a comic book, you know, creator who, like, ever said, like, oh, well, this is my graphic novel, it's not comics, I would be like, get the fuck out.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't like it used in that term. But graphic novel, you know, if it's an original work, if it's, yeah, I was going to say Mouse actually isn't a graphic novel, but something like Jimmy Corrigan. No, that was serialized, too. Trying to think of an original graphic novel. Like, there are things that would fit under that.
Parker.
Yeah. Those are, but they're also comics. I hate anything that sort of tries to obscure the fact that something's comics. And graphic novel kind of doesn't mean anything at this term. It's like fancy dress for comics.
So there you go. contact@fanboy.com. Get your email on the show. Thank you to all those who wrote in. Let's talk about other shows we've got coming out or are out already.
That's true. You can go back and you can listen to JLA New World Order DC Essential Editions. That's our Booksplode, where Connor and I went back and we read the first chunk of Grant Morrison and Howard Porter and Company's JLA stuff. It was a fun conversation. Next, I've got a Talksplode that should be coming up in the next month, which Connor is about to explain is a very full month. But I think I have an idea for who I want to talk to.
So April is full. Right behind this show on the feed, you'll find our show on Shazam. And then we have a lot more coming out. Next week will be Hellboy. And then a week after that, Justice League Birth of Fatal 5, the animation brain trust. We'll be talking about that. And then the week after that will be the Avengers Endgame show. And then at some point in the midst of all that will be Josh's Talksplode episode.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of extra shows this week. There's 5 extra shows. 9 shows this month?
I don't know.
That's a lot.
It's a lot of shows.
Stupid scheduling. Head over to fanboy.com. You can find all those shows. Our past special editions, our past Booksplodes, our past Talksplodes, all there at iFanboy.com. You'll also find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking Facebook.com/iFanboy or following us at iFanboy on Twitter and also following us at iFanboy Comics on Instagram, where we all, in addition to telling you what the pick is, we also do our Best of the Week in Panels feature. But it's all happening there. There's a lot of content there already. You can also follow us individually at Jay Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
If you like the show, you like what we do, you can write a review or leave a star rating on iTunes. You can do that for our show. You can do that for other shows. That is a very helpful thing. And it's a valuable part of the process that you will need to take part of if you enjoy those shows. That's what I'm going to say. Better yet, tell folks about what we're doing. If you like it, if you think they'll like it, however you choose to do that. There was a Note in a Bottle campaign for a while, but I feel like that's
true. We did say you should put a note in a bottle. Maybe we should revive that campaign.
God, the kids aren't even going to know what that refers to at this point.
If I could put time in a bottle.
That was the worst Jim Croce impersonation anyone's ever done.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Ever.
I take great pride in it.
Was that Tiny Tim as Jim Croce?
Yeah, actually, it was a very layered thing.
But there were some 70s references for everybody who has no idea what we're talking about. So good job with that.
All right. Cool. If you like these kind of 70s references, come back next week. And until then, I'll be Connor.
And I will remain Josh. That's nice. I said